This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Ladarius Marshall was just 16 years old when he was accused of murder. Despite little evidence, Marshall was sentenced to 20 years in prison and 10 years of extended supervision. But after years of appeals, Marshall was set free when a federal court found the main piece of evidence, Marshall's alleged confession, was the result of police misconduct and a violation of his constitutional rights. Marshall had already been in prison for 12 years. Attorney Matthew Pinnix represented Ladarius Marshall in his most recent appeal, which ended with an order to vacate his conviction. He joins me by Zoom. Matthew Pinnix, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a bit about the initial case that landed Ladarius Marshall in jail.
Sure. About 12 years ago, there was a homicide in the city of Milwaukee. And what happened was the police didn't have any witnesses. They didn't know what was going on in the case. And they didn't know who might have done it until one day they picked up a guy named Michael Winston, who they were going to charge with other criminal acts. And Mr. Winston decided that he wanted to get some credit for information that he had. He wanted to maybe do himself a favor. So he told a very self-serving story in which he pointed the finger at Ladarius as being involved in the homicide. And it was from there that police began to suspect Ladarius's involvement and ultimately went and arrested him at the time. He was 16 years old when they arrested him.
What kind of evidence did they have besides the word of this other man?
They didn't really have any other evidence. In fact, as would later come out in the criminal case against Ladarius when he was at sentencing, the state's attorney told the judge the reason that they were giving Ladarius the deal that they were giving him is because there was really no other inculpatory evidence against him besides the statement that he had given to law enforcement.
Well, and that statement is really what is at the center of all of this. As you mentioned, he was only 16 years old at the time. He was still a kid. Are the police allowed to question children like that without a parent?
Yes, they are. And they do it. And they do it with some frequency.
So we have this kid who's in police custody. Tell us a bit about what happened next.
Well, they take him down to a building in downtown called the Police Administration Bureau, and they put Ladarius, then a 16-year-old kid, into a very small room that is pretty barren. It's got just a table and a chair and a place where you can actually handcuff people to the wall. A wooden door that has no window. And they leave him in that room for the course of, I think, somewhere around 16 hours, I believe, in total. And they interview him over that period of time for a total of 7.5 hours. So he's allowed out of the room occasionally, but not frequently. So he spends the better part of a day in that tiny little room with repeated interviews from law enforcement until finally they squeeze out of him a statement in which he admits his involvement in the crime. And then they let him go down to the juvenile facility in the southern part of Milwaukee.
Well, and something that hasn't been brought up yet, but is important to this story, Ladarius has some learning difficulties. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. At the time that the case was going on, his trial attorney got an expert to evaluate him and to give some information about his cognitive capabilities, and it was determined that he was cognitively delayed.
what kind of impact does that have in these kinds of situations where it's already pretty stressful and he's being asked about a crime that he perhaps wasn't involved in?
It obviously has an impact. There was testimony in this case that it would have been difficult for Ladarius to read or to understand certain information that was being conveyed to him. So, I mean, as you point out, obviously he's in a high-stress situation. He's being held in custody by himself with no access to friends or family. He repeatedly asked to contact his grandmother, who was a significant person to him, and the police repeatedly refused to do that or defrayed the request until telling him basically that he needed to tell the police what had really happened before he would be allowed to speak with any caregiver or person who would take care of him. So I'm sure in those circumstances, you know, a person who's not functioning at the level of a person of that age normally is really going to be impaired.
Yeah. So he was given a pretty hefty sentence, and of course it went right into appeals. This case went through a lot of different layers. What did it take to get to the point we're at now?
Well, it took a long time and a lot of work. You know, Ladarius's original appeal was based around whether his statement should have been admissible at court. His original attorney had challenged the admissibility of that statement during the trial proceedings, arguing that the law enforcement officers had violated his rights. And that was denied in the Milwaukee County Trial Court, which led to Mr. Marshall's plea, because as I noted earlier, there was no other evidence against him, but it was pretty strong evidence. It would have been difficult to beat a trial. So he took a deal and he was sentenced to prison, and then he appealed that decision. That process, you know, takes, the appellate process takes over a year. He went through the entirety of the Wisconsin court system. That was denied. And then he filed a petition in the federal court, asking the federal court to overturn what the state courts had decided, asking the federal court basically to say that his statement should not have been in evidence. And so that process takes itself a very long time. So it gets sort of hairy with procedural issues and things that are difficult to dive into, but I think it's extraordinarily relevant to this whole thing because it just explains how tilted the system is against criminal defendants and Mr. Marshall specifically. So Mr. Marshall, the whole time he's arguing his statement should never have come in. There was an audio recording of his statement that was made, and there was also a transcript, a written copy of the recording that had been prepared by his trial attorney back during the original state court proceedings. And when Judge Griesbach agreed that Mr. Marshall should have a lawyer, he also told the state of Wisconsin, the Attorney General's office, to provide the federal court with a copy of the audio recording and a copy of the transcript of the statement so that the federal court could review that and decide whether Mr. Marshall's rights had been violated. The state does that and gives the federal court on its order those two documents. And we get involved in the case and write a very lengthy brief explaining how the state court did not pay attention to things in the transcript, how its ruling was unreasonable because it didn't rightly reflect what was actually done during the statement, what police did or said to Ladarius, and how they pushed him, and how they refused to respect his invocation of his right to remain silent. And in response to the brief that we filed, the state of Wisconsin took the position that, sure, that's all well and fine, but you can't, federal court, listen to the audio recording or read the transcript, because those things were never introduced into evidence in the state court proceeding where the statement was tested. So that started an extraordinarily lengthy process where we, Mr. Marshall's lawyers, had to try to go back to state court and to get that evidence in so that the federal court could rely on it.
So it seems like there was just a lot of technicalities that they were kind of leaning on that didn't necessarily speak to whether or not the boy, now a man, was actually guilty, had actually committed this crime.
Well, that's spot on. I mean, it was all about technicalities. And I think that the state's attorney understood how difficult a case they had to prove that Ladarius' statement should have actually been entered into evidence. And so they were doing whatever they could to find some technicality whereby to keep Ladarius from succeeding. And they were really going to lean on this proposition that the federal court couldn't read the transcripts, I think, because if you read the transcripts, you can see that what the officers testified to at the hearing and what's in the transcripts are not identical. And the transcripts really show a constitutional violation.
So that's ultimately what the federal court found. This was a violation of Ladarius Marshall's constitutional rights.
Exactly. That's correct. You know, a person has the right during questioning by law enforcement to say to the police officers, look, I don't want to talk to you anymore. And at that point, if a person says that to police, I don't want to talk to you, I'm done talking here, the police are supposed to respect that. And they're supposed to stop asking questions. And Ladarius repeatedly told that to the police. And they failed to respect it. In fact, at one point in the interview, Ladarius sort of says, well, I'm done talking to you. And the police just sort of said, well, okay, well, we'll take a break. We'll be back in a minute. Which is completely improper. They then let him sit in that room for a couple of hours and just stew. And he asks the officer outside the door to bring the detectives back so we can find out why he's been sitting in the room for 2 hours. And that's all he wants to know. All he wants to know is why he's been left in the room for 2 hours. And when the officers came back, they just started up again, questioning him and defraying his continued attempts to refuse to talk to them. And it was just an egregious affront to his rights. I mean, he's a 16-year-old kid. You know, no one should have to endure what Mr. Marshall endured, and anyone's rights should be respected. But, you know, to me, it's just incredible that you have a child, as you noted earlier, who's there, and these are adult police officers whose authority they're just imposing upon him to get him to say what they want him to say.
What I found interesting about his release is it seems like, and I don't know how typical this is, but they released him. He didn't have supervision afterward. And while that's undoubtedly a success in some ways, there are also some troubling aspects of that. Can you dig into that a bit?
Sure. You know, he's been in prison for 12 years. He was 16 when he went in. So he's 28 years old now, and he's spent his entire life in prison. He missed the entirety of the Obama administration, and he's walking out into a pandemic, a global pandemic, as a man who hasn't held down a job for 12 years, as a man who has no education to speak of, absent what he might have obtained in the institution. And he's expected now to just transition into society that's markedly different from the one that he walked out of. And the DOC, the state of Wisconsin, doesn't owe Mr. Marshall, according to them, anything, because he's not going to transition to supervision. He's not going to be under the purview of the Department of Corrections. He's not entitled to services that he would get if he was walking out as a person who's going on to supervision. There's not a halfway house for him. There's no career counseling. There's nothing, really. No support. He does have family in the community, and that's fantastic. But I mean, just imagine if tomorrow, you know, you were taken to an entirely new place and you were sort of told, okay, good luck out here. And you had been given, you know, nothing, to no money, no resources, no guaranteed place to live. I mean, that's what happened. And that's, to me, another frustrating aspect of this case, that really all is the result of a continued attempt by governmental officials to keep Mr. Marshall in custody for as long as possible.
So what is next for Ladarius?
Well, he presently is out of custody, and I am certainly hopeful that Mr. Marshall will have a very productive and fruitful life from here on out and can put all this behind him. My understanding is that Mr. Marshall is going to look into whether he can get compensation for the violation of his rights. And if he can, I say more power to him, and I'm hopeful that he's successful because he deserves it.
Well, Matthew Pinnix, thank you so much for joining us here on Link Effect and sharing your work.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Attorney Matthew Pinnix represented Ladarius Marshall in his most recent appeal, which ended with an order to vacate his conviction.